Hello, White Sox fans. Welcome to another edition of Future Sox. My name is Ian Eskridge. I'm here joined by Nick Morawski and Danny Miller. How you doing, boys?
I mean, honestly, I could talk White Sox every single day. Sometimes no one will listen. No one will want to listen, but I'm more than willing to talk White Sox baseball. So it's a good day.
Yes, indeed. Well, I guess we could start it off with John Schriffen being named the play-by-play for the White Sox, joining Stoney in the booth. I know that all of us have talked about this quite a bit. Why don't you go ahead and start us off, Nick? How do you feel about the decision? What do you think about his style, and what are you expecting out of him?
I don't know much about his MLB style. I think the resume is a little thin. Maybe some KBO, some spot stuff. When he was doing some ESPN work, XFL, Slam Ball, where he's had some experiences. I guess what got me a little excited is, there was some chemistry. I mean, there had to have been chemistry, right? Or else he wouldn't have got the gig. They had this lengthy dinner, and, he's saying all the right stuff. What I thought was interesting was, what he talked about, how Reinsdorf was looking for somebody to be committed. And I thought that was maybe a little bit of a dig at Jason Benetti. And, of course, Schriffen, like, this is his first gig. This is his first gig with an actual team. I think he's going to say all the right things. He's going to say all the things that are going to get fans excited. Like, Grifol was trying to say all the right things. It was his first gig, and I'm going to try to get the fans on my side. So I can't read too much into it. I thought, that little thing about commitment, was I think that's important for me as a fan. I'd like to have whoever's going to be the play-by-play to be doing a majority of the Sox game. So, hey, if Schriffen has chemistry with Stone, and, I think it's going to take him a little bit of time just to get to know the team and for us to believe him. Like, when he's talking about the troubles and all the heartaches and everything that the Sox have gone through, well, you don't know because you haven't been around, So I think it might take some time for fans to warm up to him. But, hey, if he's got some chemistry with Stone, it'll show. We'll figure that out. But a little disappointed wasn't Connor. But at the end of the day, as long as it's a good broadcast, that's what I'm hoping for.
How you feel about it, Danny? I know that you probably haven't heard a whole lot of baseball talk. Hold on one second. What's going on here? That off of there. There we go. You're muted there, Danny. That's what the issue is. There we go.
Well, all right. Let's try this again. I was just going to say that, along with all the things that Nick was saying, and you're right, I haven't really heard a lot of baseball stuff from Mr. Schriffen, but, with Nick saying it, he's saying all the right things. It's kind of one of those things where he's done a little bit of everything a lot, like, Jason Benetti tossing his hat in on everything. And Jason Benetti was really good at just about everything he did, right? So my hope is that, maybe we're getting a lot of the same from Schriffen, except for the fact that, maybe he is dedicated, and we don't have to worry about replacing another play-by-play guy and say, 2 years down the road when everybody's just getting settled in on a new one. But, the thing that I really wanted to point out was because he hasn't had a team, I haven't heard a lot of his calls, right? I kind of did some homework on him, just looking up YouTube videos and whatnot when, I saw that he was a final three, choice. And what I came across was basically like a highlight reel of highlight reels. And it was him doing mostly football calls. There were some other calls in there, but mostly football calls. And, when you've got plays that are, big breaking plays, long passes down the field, guys busting out of tackles, running over other players and going on long scores, those kind of exciting plays, he sounded great on, right? thing is in baseball, there's a lot of those down moments. Now, I know as a play-by-play guy, you know, you're kind of leaning on your color guy, right, to get you through those moments. And having Steve Stone in the booth is probably going to help immensely. But, you know, I'm still curious about what he's going to do, you know, to add to Steve in those, you know, down times. Because anybody can, I shouldn't say anybody, but making the exciting play call has got to be a lot easier than filling space and dead air, right? So, and the other question I have is, you know, we've seen Steve Stone over the last couple of seasons take some time off during the season. And, you know, are we going to be in moments where we've got two brand new people or unseasoned people in the booth, and what's going to happen there? So, you know, I don't mind the move. I just have some questions and some curiosities about it, but I'm very open to what's ahead of us.
Well, I'm sure Bill Walton will be available or make himself available, you know, because that worked out so well. The football plays, you know, when there was a big play, he did get excited. And that's, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what that sounds like in a baseball context. He did, you know, I don't know, like 15, 20 games or something like that with the KBO. And, you know, it's the KBO, you know, like how excited could he possibly get watching the KBO? I mean, you know, obviously he's a professional broadcaster, but, you know, I mean, who knows what. Does he really know what he's looking at? I mean, is it really anything that's really all that exciting to him? I don't know. I guess we'll find out. I don't know. We'll see how it works out. He seems like he's got a pretty decent, you know, work ethic. And, you know, he did Good Morning America. You know, and ESPN is obviously the worldwide leader. You know, they generally don't hire too many stiffs, so let's hope that this works out for the best. So there were, you know, we try and get away from this, really, people, we do. But the Cease rumors are back. Cease is now going to Seattle, who traded for Jorge Polanco. So one of their outfield prospects, their number 5 prospect, was dealt in that deal. So that kind of slims things up a little bit. And I don't know if you guys saw Elijah Evans tweet about what people were proposing for the White Sox in return for Cease, more or less saying that the return of a Wu or something similar is not exactly what the White Sox would be looking for. I mean, obviously you're looking to raise your talent floor regardless of what the return is. But I would think that they would be looking for more positional talent on that. And obviously whenever Jerry DePoto is mentioned, or whenever trade talks are mentioned, you should never discount Jerry DePoto sticking his nose in there, because that guy loves to deal prospects. You got any thoughts on that, Danny?
You know, I'll be completely honest with you. I know that this is, you know, something that's come up in the last 24 hours here with them throwing their hats in the ring. And after things had kind of died down and cooled off, and it had been pretty much speculated that Dylan Cease was going to stay on the South side, at least for, you know, the first half of the season. Some predict that he wasn't going anywhere all season. I'm just going to be, my only thought on it really is I don't buy it, because normally we would say where there's smoke, there's fire. But, you know, we could have said that, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 times this offseason about Dylan Cease trade talks. And, you know, the Yankees were supposedly all in on him at one point. And, you know, there were 5 teams, I think Bob Gale, my Nightingale, reported on it. And they were all heavy in talks. And, you know, then as things kind of slowed down a little bit, you start getting the White Sox asking price is astronomical. And I'm not necessarily buying that Jerry DePoto is willing to meet the White Sox asking price I'm just not. I just feel like this is another Bob Nightingale thing coming out saying that, you know, hey, we can't let this story die because that's just not who Bob Nightingale is.
Yeah, but generally, you know, when he says something, there's at least some modicum of truth to it, you know, if he's talking about it. How you feel about that, Nick?
I think Nightingale is the White Sox whisperer. I think he gets stuff from either Reinsdorf himself or others in the organization and kind of push this. Please push this narrative, if you will, for a variety of different reasons. And this Seattle thing, yeah, Seattle can get crazy. They've gotten crazy and strange. So they're definitely a wild card. You know, Bruce Levine had a comment, I believe, on 670 The Score this past weekend where there's a 0% chance in his mind that Dylan Cease starts the season with the Chicago White Sox. And Bruce Levine's been around Chicago sports for some time. So I look at it in a way of maybe, you know, teams against each other, of course, and, you know, and if you've ever done negotiations, whether it's car, house, job, you go big. You know, you shoot for the moon. And you realize I'm probably not going to get that, but I'm going to get somewhere a little bit less where it's still going to be palatable. You know, and that could be what all this talk is, you know, with negotiation stuff. Why not? You know, this you've got this big asset. Go high. Someone might meet you there. I'm wondering, and maybe you guys, what your thoughts on this kind of race with the calendar, though. You know, we're 2 weeks away-ish from pitchers and catchers reporting, less than 2 months away from actually opening day. Is it going to get to the point where it's not necessarily this, you know, against other teams, but these teams are looking at the calendar saying, I don't want Cease going and starting with the Sox. I want Cease the entire season. I want to get him in a club. I want to start the year off right. I don't want other teams to be competing with me come trade deadline. Because you know there'll be other teams that look and say, wow, we're in it. We're kind of in it at this point. Why don't we go? And now we don't know if they have the prospects or not, right? There's only a handful of teams that probably can do something like this. But I think there might be teams that say, you know what, I just don't want to risk it. It gets a little bit too desperate and something goes down pretty close maybe to that, what, February 15th, pitchers and catchers reporting date.
Yeah, well, there's something like 145 free agents still out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think that necessarily this particular instance of what's going on right now, I don't know as if, you know, this is any, you know, anything really, you know, I can't say it's any different than everybody else not signing just because the trade hasn't been made. And it came across today, there had been rumors in the past, you know, leading up to this point that the Angelos were going to sign or sell the Baltimore Orioles. And they did today to a couple of billionaires. And I wonder whether, you know, with those negotiations going on, that it just kind of put everything off on the back burner for the Orioles. And maybe that kind of slowed things down for the Orioles. And maybe that's partially why that didn't get done. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the only reason it didn't get done. But, you know,
Well, I mean, Ian, new ownership group, maybe there's a different way of spending or going about their business. And it's not necessarily, well, we have to live by the trade because we're not going to throw around big money. Maybe with this, it's like, well, we don't have to trade for Cease. You know, maybe we sign a big name pitcher. Or is Blake Snell still out there? You know, there's arms that could be still out there, or they could say, you know what? We'll look at perhaps the free agency market next year and go big with money. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, you know, when the negotiations are going on, who knows if there's like a freeze on major moves, you know? I can't say. Yeah. All I can say is that I think that, you know, there's definitely like at least, you know, there's some thought there with that going on. You know, I don't, you know, like I said, I don't think that that's the entire reason why nothing happened. I'm sure it probably has to do with Chris Getz's asking price in addition to what was going on over there that was probably like, you know what, we're going to hold off on making some sort of a major move, whether it be signing Blake Snell, whether it be trading for Dylan Cease. We're going to hold off on that until, you know, because we know that this deal's coming, so we're just going to hold off on it until that's taken care of, you know, in case these, you know, like, I don't, I mean, who knows what these owners want, you know? Could be that they want to keep the payroll down and use the farm system. Could be that, you
know.
That's true. I mean, who knows, you know? So we'll see what comes of it. You know, like you said, we still have until Valentine's Day to see if a trade happens. And if not, you know, Dylan Cease will be in Arizona at Camelback Ranch throwing on the backfields, you know, throwing some bullpens. We'll see what happens. So, anything more on that? You guys got anything more on Cease rumors?
I mean, Pedro Grifol came out and said, you know, he's the opening day starter, which does that feel odd to you? Like, it's obvious, but I feel like that gets announced like spring.
After
I can't
reporting.
Remember, like, even when Sale was around and, you know, it was never this far out before pitchers and catchers even reported. Is just kind of an odd thing to just come out and say, even though it feels like it. Sure, yeah, Dylan Cease is your ace right now, but I thought that was an odd thing.
Well, I mean, that was actually, as soon as you brought up the question, that was pretty much going to be my retort, was that, you know, who else that is potentially, I mean, because we don't even know who's going to round out the rotation. We all have ideas. Yeah. We pretty much think we know who the first five are going to be to start the season. But, you know, out of the you know, handful of names that are out there that we can throw in the starting rotation, who else is going to be your opener?
Tukey.
You know,
I want to see
Toussaint.
I want to see Toussaint.
I mean, yeah. Eric Fetty, you know, may by the end of the year be your best starter for, you know, for all intents and purposes. We don't really know, but you can't really pencil him in for that starting spot. But I agree, just making that announcement this early without ever having seen anybody thrown a pitch, you know, in 2024.
Pedro doing something questionable.
Yeah.
Seems out of character.
How dare he?
So it was also announced the other day to capitalize on the 20-year anniversary of the 2005 White Sox World Series championship that Sox Fest will be coming back next year. We do not, as far as I know, have a location, but there will be a fan fest. Now, this is something that you've been definitely passionate about, Nick. Let me have it.
Well, look, first things, if they're going to celebrate the 2005 team with the 20th anniversary, I'm all for it. It's a fan fest. How many types of teams like this do we have in our lifetime? You know, zero. I mean, we've talked about, you know, division championship teams and all this kind of stuff. But to say, hey, we're going to bring this team that is still around, you know, guys are still kind of connected to the team. We hear about, you know, Burley or Pruszynski or Canerico talking to the club or coming by. Obviously, Guillen is very present and vocal. But, gosh, I would love to see that. I mean, that would – who knows if there's any signings or any positive stuff to talk about the 2025 team. But I have no problem. It's not their fault that this organization is a mess, okay? And I know a lot of people want to stop talking about the 85 Bears. Can we stop talking about the 2005 Sox? I get all of that. But when you have so little to hang on to that has actually been accomplished – and they could still get together as a unit, and you could still see that in one room, I am all for that. In terms of the actual Sox Fest, yes, I've been hitting the drum on this for a long period of time. Every other team has figured this out almost post-COVID of how to get all fans of all ages, no matter if you're a season ticket holder, if you've just got a 10-game plan, or if you are just a novice fan. In the dead of winter, the opportunity to rub shoulders with like-minded people It can only help your organization. Whether you have something big to talk about or not, you're growing your brand. Somehow grow your brand. That's my challenge to you, White Sox. You haven't done it in several years. There are so many Sox fans. You've talked to them. I've talked to them that live out of state. It is difficult to get to Sox games during the summer. You've got a festival that's 3 days long in the city of Chicago, right downtown. They offer weekend packages, all that kind of stuff. It is an opportunity for all fans of all ages to celebrate their team and the extra twist of the 2005 White Sox next year. So this is awesome.
Yeah, and they're also going to get to celebrate the 2024 White Sox after this year's championship. How do you feel about this whole Sox Fest thing coming up, Danny?
I'm first in line. I'm first in line to purchase my tickets, man. It's long overdue. That's all I'll say. It's not all I'll say. We all know I have something to add to just about everything because I can't shut up. Again, I agree with everything they had to say, but the fact of this whole thing about having a season ticket holder festival and not doing something for the everyman just seems like a kick in the pants. I mean, it's really just kind of disrespectful to your fans in a time where we have been force-fed all of this nonsense about being competitors for a much larger prize than a single win in two straight postseasons and then being one of the worst teams of baseball shortly after that. Not having a fan fest during that time, blaming at least the first one on COVID for not being there, and then continually not doing it was just kind of, it felt like you're slapping your every fan in the face. Not everybody's going to be a season ticket holder. Not everybody can afford some of these season ticket packages. Not everybody can make it out to the park all the time for those types of things. So what about the folks that come, three, four, five times a year? We talk about wanting to engage our fans and wanting to bring in a new breed of fan, wanting to keep
you talk about that.
Going.
The White Sox don't talk about that. They send you emails about, do you feel like you know this person better as a friend? That's what you get.
Well, I'm just saying Major League Baseball in general has been trying to kind of promote its brand to the younger, just keeping a new class and a new group of fans growing. We saw dwindling numbers across the board a few years back, you got to do these things to, these young children who are impressionable, obviously
there needs to be.
It worked on some of us. We're still here after watching garbage teams for so long.
Guys, I just feel like the Sox have gotten stale in terms of marketing for the last several years. They just kind of roll out the same stuff. It's the same collection of promos, but a different design and a different color. And they highlight all the great food, but every other ballpark is caught up to that kind of stuff. Every other ballpark is doing killer promos. I'm sorry. It's just gotten old hat. Like, it's the same people in the organization that are just rolling it out, saying they're going to cough up their money no matter what. Like, get creative, get inventive. They almost have lost their way in terms of trying to connect. And that's what I kind of talked about in that article. There is a major disconnect, a fan disconnect. And I think it's felt in the higher ups, but I just don't think they care.
Well, this year they've got, they're going to have the Luis Robert gold-plated, riding on a gold-plated Panther bobblehead that'll be available to the first 500 people in the door. I can see where you're coming from on that. And, to be fair, they didn't have the season ticket holder Sox prom thing for a few years either, because of the same reasons as Sox Fest. So they haven't been the only ones getting it for years. They just happened to get it back now. So
Right. Yeah, I should have thrown that disclaimer in there. But, the thing is, all right, let me put it to you like this. So as a child, I grew up in a Cubs household. I went to Catholic school on the south side of Chicago, where perfect attendance got you free White Sox tickets to at least one game a season. I had been to both parks at a very young age, multiple times. I enjoyed the feeling of being on the south side better than at the north side, even though I came from a Cubs household, even though the Cubs were on WGN in the middle of the summer and had a couple of friends that were watching them all day long. But you know what? I had other friends that the park was more accessible to me. Tickets were, affordable for a family. Parking was affordable. Food was affordable. But as ticket prices have increased, things like that, some folks will say, it's an arm and a leg to get in the ballpark. So like Nick says, when you compound the price of going to a game with the fact that there are people that are from out of state that can't make it to a game that aren't seats, they're just not doing anything to usher in the next wave, the next young group. This was all ingrained in me as a child, even though I came from a Cubs household. And here I am today, still a Sox fan. Tried and true, bleeding it out with everybody else.
How about letting folks in to see batting practice? The White Sox batting practice.
It used to be a thing.
It used to be a thing. And, you talk about young fans getting in, having access to players early. You get a baseball thrown to you in the outfield during Sox batting practice. That right there, hooks you in. And you start to get to know, well, who threw that to me? And there becomes a bit of a love affair. I've heard the ticket story, Danny, from a lot of my friends, too, that, grew up, in those types of programs where good grades got you tickets, perfect attendance. Sometimes it was a field trip. Mm-hmm. If you were at a summer camp, you were going to a day Sox game. They had camp day. And those types of things, they still probably have camp day and stuff like that. I can't speak for the, a perfect attendance or giving out free tickets, this, that, and the other. But just these little things that you just wonder about, why won't you go the extra mile, separate yourself a little bit, and make that connection? Now is a good time because you're kind of starting over, and there's going to be some young players coming in probably over the next year or so that – this is what we're going to build around. And you might start highlighting that sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. They do the whole, I think it's on Sundays, family Sundays or whatever, where they let the kids run the bases. That's cool. That's something I would have enjoyed, immensely as a youngin', but I just feel like it's not enough. It really isn't. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe kids doing grounds work, just kind of, raking the field after.
Run the bases with away. This. With this,
the lawn, perhaps.
Yeah, they got those fostered.
Just a, something.
It's, like the guys come out in between innings and they got the rakes that they drag behind them on the chains.
Yeah.
You just chain these things to the kids' waist and let them run the bases.
On Sundays, I think the kids should be doing it all. Gene Hendry, you have a day off, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, they do that in the minor leagues, have the kids call the players' names, so why not do it at guaranteed rate? I'll just say this and then move on. I took my son to opening day last year, and we were fourth people in line to get in. We got in, went down into center field area. Gabe Kapler threw my kid a ball. My kid was stoked, and that's the kind of experiences that the kids should be having. They should allow everybody in for batting practice. I mean, is it a huge deal? No, but it's an olive branch, it's something to get the people into the park and give positive experiences for families to come, and for, Zach Hampel's come out there and get some extra baseballs for his collection.
There's so many logistics. You talk about just getting into the park, it's cost and money. Literally getting into the park is difficult. Just how they can't figure that out. If you open up batting practice and you say, you could get in early now and you could get in to see Sox batting practice, that might get more people in sooner. So there's not a log jam.
Alleviate some of the stress at the gate for sure.
Obviously people are going to tailgate to the last very second, we know this, and then complain because they can't get in for first pitch. It's like, well, what did you kind of expect? But there needs to be a lot of reimagining, but you know, you open up things earlier and give them a reason of why to get in earlier, it could help you out.
Yeah, they definitely need it's the small things.
Yeah. Yeah, the same security system that's been there since it was the building was, you know, put up in 1991 when they opened up.
Same exact security system owned by the owner of the team who feels that that's okay. So moving along. So the White Sox MVP for the last few years, right fielder Gavin Sheets, was talking to some reporters at the Boys and Girls Club event the other day. And he said, everybody is counting us out. The only thing you can do is use that to fuel us. We go out every day trying to play hard and win games, and that doesn't change what we are going to do. We all know we aren't favored to do anything this year. That's the first time since I've been here in the big leagues in 3 years. We can use that to help us and motivate us and see what we can do with it. Now, you guys remember that segment that used to be on Saturday Night Live, Jack Handy. Going to be a motivational poster somewhere, no doubt on Nicky Lopez's bulletin board of tweets saying that the White Sox suck. Nick, Gavin Sheets is your guy. Let me know what is he looking to do this year?
He's trying to stay relevant. He is trying to once again convince us fans that he's putting in the work. He has upped his defensive, game. You know, it's the same stuff that I heard from last offseason. I don't know where he's coming from with. I don't think they were favored last year. I don't believe so. I feel like the projections were pretty low. Folks, prognosticators were low on the White Sox. So he must have just had something in his mind. But he is true with everybody is counting the Sox out. I just don't know what value Gavin Sheets has on this team right now. I mean, offensively, is that really something that you need to keep because he's got a left-handed bat and every now and then he runs into something? He's a liability in right field. And yeah, it's not his fault he's out there, but he is. So then try to get better at the position. I haven't seen anything. And maybe you're just asking somebody to do something that they should not and can't do. And that could very well be the case. He seemed like a man without a position for the last several years. You know, this log jam of hybrids, you know, first baseman, DH. Well, now we're going to kind of put them in the corner outfield. The Sox have failed miserably at addressing problems to get better defensively. And I just don't see – he doesn't fit into the Grifol attitude of, like, defense, speed, you know, athleticism, all this kind of stuff. So I guess he's useful for saying these types of things that are going to be on, you know, snippets will be on t-shirts. Everybody is counting us out. Can you see that? Well, we won't see it in batting practice because we won't be able to be in the stadium, but you'll maybe have video of all of the players with these, you know, counting us out, you know, kind of shirts. It's laughable. Of all the things that people talk about year after year, health and living my best life and everything's right, it's this type of stuff from Gavin Sheets that drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'd say that they put him at a disadvantage. And, you know, when it comes to paying attention to the minor leagues, that's something that I focus on heavily, if you didn't know. Gavin Sheets, when he was drafted, was not the power left-handed bat that everybody wants to project on him. Now, the White Sox have worked on trying to unlock some of that potential in that giant frame of his. But the thing is that he was always a bat-to-ball first baseman who would occasionally run into one, you know? And he's taller than Andrew Vaughn. He probably hit less, you know, he definitely hit less home runs. And I feel like if he was trying to concentrate a little less on trying to punish the baseball, that he would probably have better results. And like the thing is, we know this. He was never an outfielder. His dad was an outfielder, but he was never an outfielder. And the fact that he took it upon himself to learn, to try and learn that to be more useful, I commend him for that. However, he's not an outfielder. He doesn't have the foot speed, doesn't have the glove. His arm's okay, you know, but I mean, that's not his position. I know Danny loves watching him out in right field. Why don't you tell me some more about that, Danny?
I was just going to go on, you know, kind of in agreement with you there is, you know, if you go back a few years, the 2020 season, I actually wrote, you know, for White Sox Daily, I wrote a blog about some of the White Sox positional battles. And one of those was, first base / right field and what they were going to do with all of those players that could man either of the positions, at least, you know, so the White Sox have been talking about. And it wasn't until 2020 when, he had to take a seat. There was no minor league season and he was not invited to be part of the taxi squad that he decided to take that time off and spend some time with his dad to reinvent himself, because it wasn't just Andrew Vaughn who was in front of him at first base. You know, there was a bunch of guys that could play that position. And, I guess what I'm saying is, when, you know, Nick, when you say it's not his fault that he's out there, I don't disagree with you when I say that, but I will say he is partially to blame for being there, because he tried to reinvent himself and he tried to make himself serviceable to the organization that he was a part of and he did make his way onto the major league roster. Now, what I'll say is it is the fault of the managers and the front office for allowing him to be in a position that he is definitely not suitable to play, because the man, hey, you know what? Like Ian says, throughout his minor league career, before they tried to really unlock the power and, you know, going on before that, before he was drafted, he really was a stud at putting a bat on the ball.
He did have, he had one good year as a power hitter in college. And that was at Wake Forest, and that field that they play at is like one thing college baseball fans hate: the stadium that Wake Forest plays at, because they feel like the home run comes cheaper there. So that, I just wanted to throw that out there while we're talking about this.
Right. So, you know, like playing at Truist.
I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like playing in Charlotte. It's like playing in the PCL, you know, it's like playing in Coors Field. I mean, it's supposed to be like playing at Guaranteed Rate, but the other teams seem to hit them. Anywho.
Right. Exactly. But anywho, you know, the point is he's not a right fielder. There's nothing really about that. He just does not look comfortable out there at all. And this is no offense to Gavin, because, you know, watching him in the minors, he really was a fun guy to watch coming up. And now that there are question marks hanging around first base, you know, I'm sure Mr. Delicious will tell us all about, you know, Andrew Vaughn. I wouldn't mind keeping Gavin around to see. I'll take a guy that's only going to have 15 home runs if he's got an 800 plus OPS, which, you know, Andrew can't seem to carry for an entire season. You know, he's going to hit balls into gaps. And if he gets that bat to ball back, maybe some of that power that they unlock stays. But he's got to focus on that contact. But, you know, I'm neither here nor there. I really don't want to see him out in right field again. And if he doesn't make this team as a starter or even a fourth outfielder, I'm not going to miss him. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but
no, it just doesn't belong there. It always goes back to the organization. It always goes back to player development and the big picture. And, you know, someone's got to be the adult, right? Someone's got to say, I know what you want to do, but that's not an option. I'm sorry. That's not the vision. Like, we've got bigger plans, and we're either going to package you up and we are going to get you out of this organization, or we are going to, I don't know, try to set you up for success where you should be. And that might rise to the top when you do have opportunities. It goes back again to do the Sox hold on to players far longer than they should? Do they try to give guys shots that, you know what, that was maybe 2 years ago, you know?
I don't think there's any question that they do.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of asking questions that I know the answer to, but that's what really grinds your gears. And
oh, absolutely.
I think Gavin Sheets is a prime example of that.
I'd say part of the issue here is that a lot of the guys that they do end up keeping for a long time in the minor leagues is, you know, we all know that the assembly of the farm system and the talent levels were issues for a very long time. And I'm hoping that it's changing a little bit and that things are kind of going more up the middle now than they used to as far as talent wise goes. But I think part of the reason why a bunch of these guys were sticking around and that they were hoping that they were going to figure it out was because they didn't want to spend any money on positions. And so they keep these guys around and keep on stringing them along. And, you know, it's like they kind of hit their ceiling and yet they stick around for a few years. And, you know, I mean, that's it. You know, I like prospects as much as anybody else, you know, and I like to root for them. But I mean, at a certain time, there's a time to start cutting loose, you know. And if a guy's been in the system for 4 or 5 years and you haven't seen a market improvement, probably time to move on. So speaking of moving on, you had mentioned health earlier, Nick. The White Sox, Yoan Moncada in particular, is showing up early to spring training a couple weeks before the pitchers and catchers report, and certainly before the position players report, putting a big emphasis on strengthening his core and trying to balance out the muscles in his back to try and keep himself healthy for an entire season. We've been having issues with that with Moncada, Eloy, Andrew Vaughn wearing out like 2/3 of the way through the season and then having a swoon through the last month and a half. Just injuries everywhere. Are the White Sox going to have a better health year this year? And whose health in particular of all those players, if you had to pick a, you know, rank them, you know, like in a top two of whose health out of those guys? I mean, obviously we know Luis Robert is number one, probably as far as health goes for who we need to stay healthy. But of everybody else, who are the guys that you think that would need to keep healthy in order to try and keep this team above, or at least get them to 500? Because I don't even see that happening. That's a big question. You know, and
I've been thinking about this a lot, specifically with Moncada, after our conversation that we had last week, and you brought it up, Ian, and I think it's a great point, which takes you in a different direction with this question of if Moncada just breaks out, you know, it's a contract year, he is feeling healthy, and Pedro Grifol had, you know, this quote about him, you know, yes, he's coming early and everything's right. Who does that benefit? Does that just solely benefit Yoan Moncada, or does that benefit the White Sox? Can they flip him? Is that how he benefits the White Sox, is they can somehow trade him at the deadline? Or is it really just a benefit to Yoan Moncada because he doesn't have a future beyond this year with the White Sox? So when I think about right now, I'm thinking in two parts here. Who can stay healthy and have a great first half so they can give us something maybe at the deadline, okay? Or who can stay healthy and that's going to be around maybe for beyond this year? And so I'll give you kind of two answers. I think if Eloy Jimenez, because obviously Luis Robert Jr. is most likely not going anywhere unless something absolutely bizarre and crazy happens. If Eloy Jimenez can really stay healthy and hit his 40 plus, and he's tracking that. And he's not just, you know, a one-dimensional guy, but he's staying away from the ground balls. You know, we're seeing a different type of Eloy Jimenez. I think that's a guy that maybe we can trade and we could get something for as we are trying to create a new identity. You know, in terms of like who's going to be around for a little bit longer, I think they want to hold on to Andrew Vaughn. I get the impression that he's a guy that they kind of want to build around. It's not like I necessarily agree with it because I'm still waiting to see. He's 26. If he could be healthy, he can have that. I'm having like the best year of my life. I think that's great for like the Sox moving forward. Eloy, it would be more of, I think he'd be a better asset, right? I think we can get something for him in that sense.
So did you, I'm just going to throw this out here while we're in the middle of talking about Eloy. Did you happen to hear the quote from Pedro about Eloy working on his swing?
Give it to me, please. I need it. I need it right now.
So yeah, we've all seen Eloy's stance, and he usually starts his stance with his hands roughly around his waist. Pedro said that Eloy is working on his swing, bringing his hands down a little bit. Now, working with hitting coaches, one of the things that he's saying that he's trying to avoid hitting ground balls. He's trying to get the ball up in the air some more, so he's putting his hands down. Dropping your hands on a swing is a great way to start popping the ball up. Which, I mean, I guess if you've got elite bat speed might help things a little bit. But my impression of Eloy's ground ball issues was more based on timing and location, seemed to me anyway, that it was more about timing and location than where his hands were located at the beginning of his swing, because he always carried his hands very low. So I just wanted to throw that out there in case you guys hadn't heard.
No, if anything, and all I really want to hear from anybody talking about most of this team when it comes to hitting is they're all working on pitch selection.
Yes.
Period.
Yeah.
End of story. Stop right there. Next question, please.
Yeah. Agreed. Going back to the Yoan thing as to who it benefits, I'd say that absolutely the only way that Yoan Moncada's season this year can really benefit the White Sox is if he stays completely healthy and they figured that the issue was him taking care of himself and keeping his body in shape and he goes out and has an MVP type season. And it's like rewind the clock and we have a new Yoan Moncada attitude and player return in form. I'd say that that's about the only way that the White Sox benefit from it, and it's not just solely fired up, and it's not just solely, you know, to his benefit. I don't see, you know, as I said last week, and I don't know if you saw, but NBC Sports Chicago had an entire episode about Yoan Moncada that came out today, saying basically the exact same thing, is that no matter what, he's pretty much gone at the end of this year. But yeah, I say, so that's, unless MVP.
And that's, you know, I threw something out on Twitter X today, which is, you know, never the best place to have an actual, you know, thoughtful conversation, but it was more of just a blast of, hey, if Moncada has a contract year, if Eloy actually does stay healthy, this is the game we play every year, right? If Andrew Vaughn, you know, breaks out, Robert just repeats what he did in 2023. What is really the difference? What is actually the game difference from the 61 wins that they had? Because you know what our pitching looks like right now, and I don't think there's any going to be major changes between now and opening day. So what is that game difference? Even if Moncada has an MVP type season, you know, what would be the big turnaround?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this. If you have Robert and Yoan, I mean, like we've said before, and we've been saying it for years, if these guys can stay healthy, you know, with better defense, and a lot of people are down on the pitching. I'm not particularly down on the pitching so much. I feel like there's I feel like there's a little bit more upside than is being given credit to the pitching. And I also think Bannister's going to pay some dividends here as well. But ultimately, is it, like I said, is we're talking about scratching and clawing to get to 500 with the way this roster is constructed. So is there going to be a big, you know, return on the investment on Yoan Moncada, even if he does go for an MVP this season? No, not probably not, because you're still looking at 500 and probably no shot in hell for playoffs. So
it'd be just fun to watch, I guess.
It would just be
fun to watch a healthy, successful Moncada, something that we've been waiting for since 2017.
Yeah, I was, as you know, our top 30 prospect lists are coming out in early March, in the first week of March. And so James shared with me a document that Future Sox has been keeping for, hold on, let me look how many years it's been. Since 2009, there are prospect rankings, top 30 since midway through 2009. And just looking back at these prospect rankings and just thinking about all these guys that we had such hopes for, and you know, just realizing how ridiculous it all looks now looking back at it is pretty sad, especially when you bring up the likes of Yoan Moncada and Eloy just not cutting it, you know?
I need my iron lung.
You got a lot of lung darts on this conversation, just on this topic, Danny. Danny, what's a typical game for you? Are you half a pack? Are you
at home.
At home.
No, you know what, to be honest with you, I will turn it off if it gets to that point.
Okay. All right. You don't.
Oh yeah. I am not. I used to be more of a glutton for punishment, but as time has rolled on, I just, you know, I've gotten to the point where I've got better things to do with my day and my life than subject myself to such misery over and over.
Good for you, man.
162 times a year.
I got to figure that switch. I just don't have it.
I know last season, especially, with you doing the whole lockdown thing.
You were
pretty much locked on and locked in, and you didn't have much of a choice. But, you know, Ian and I actually had some conversations last season where, you know, I got to set up out in the yard. Everything's beautiful. You know, made sure that I have internet out at the campground so I can catch all my Sox games, or at least turn the radio on and catch something, whatever. But, yeah, man, I do all this just for Sox and sports in general, Chicago sports in general, because, you know, literally they've all been kind of rough the last few years. But I sat down with my wife recently and I said, you know, we're spending all this money on these streaming services and, you know, beautifying our yard and putting up, you know, nice expensive TVs all over the place for all these things. And I said, you know, I don't know, maybe I should rethink this strategy, because it's all just a letdown lately. So yeah, is a typical game. If they're winning, I'm 2-3 in a game. If they are not playing so well, I'm 2-3 in the first three innings and I'm turning it off.
There you go. All right. Well, I'm gonna be checking in on you quite often as this season gets going.
Please do. Somebody needs to.
And I'm not trying to stop you either. I just am checking in on just the quantity. I'm just curious.
Oh, you know what? I need to stop. But
I'm not. Hey, don't look at me as a regulator, somebody that's don't look at me like that. I just you know, I just want to know numbers. As a non-smoker, I just am curious.
If I stop, though, it just ruins my entire inner persona.
Absolutely. I get that.
Well, I'm sure that they'll give us something interesting, and there'll probably be all sorts of quotes and interviews over the next week here to fuel another episode next week of nonsense before we get our pitchers and catchers reporting. Do you guys have anything for this week on, before we close here?
You know, no. I'm just... yeah, I'm trying to find positive. I'm really trying to find positives. I'm trying to talk myself into, you know, the what ifs, because there has been nothing of real excitement at all, from the retention of Pedro Grifol to, you know, Getz and just the lackluster offseason in terms of acquisitions. So the way my mind is, it's just like, well, maybe that's like a free agent signing. If these guys can get healthy, stay healthy, and we have something at least somewhat fun to watch the first couple months. You know, we talked about it. Is there a chance that maybe out of April, May, like, whoa, you're kind of towards the top of the Central, and then maybe that's as far as they can hold on. I don't know. But I just need something, because it's going to be a long, long summer, and I will stay tuned. I will stay tuned. I'll probably watch my usual 145, 150 games, you know, live, you know, and then catch up on the other handful, however I do it. But that's just me. I'm wired that way. I've tried to stop. I know it's not for everybody, and I get that. But I know it was going to be a disappointing off season. It feels all of it.
Danny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really don't have much to add. I'm with Nick. I will turn on as many of those 162 as I possibly can.
As many as you can.
Whether or not I get through them is a completely different story, but yeah, you know, I mean, that's really, I'm with you. I'm hoping for just something positive, something that's more watchable than last season was. If I get that, I don't know. I need something actually much more watchable than last season was. I'm not asking for a 90-win season. Just give me something that keeps me entertained enough to keep me engaged and not want to turn off the game.
Better brand of baseball.
Really, honestly, you know, stop giving me ridiculous quotes. Don't try to blow smoke up my skirt. Because I don't want to hear, we're not dumb. You know what I mean? And they throw these things out there like Sox fans are stupid sometimes. Like some of these quotes they just sound like rehearsed. And, you know, we're doing everything. We're our brand of baseball just needs some time. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. If you suck, come out and say you suck. You know what? We know we got things to work on, but we suck. I'd rather hear that. Shoot me straight.
That would be refreshing. But they've gotten practice, Danny. They've said the same thing like over the last 3 years or so. So it is kind of like rehearsed, you know, because it's the same script. It's the same stuff. So you should be good at saying it by now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's, you know, as far as I go with the Sox, you know, like I always have it on next to me. But I do have minor league baseball to take my mind off of watching that subpar product that's been on the field for the last year and a half. So, you know, looking forward to spring training, and we'll see how the year goes. You know, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it'll be fun regardless, whether it be a complete and total train wreck or whether they play a decent brand of baseball. And I'm hoping for that. So FutureSox.net, you can find written content and this podcast. You can also find this podcast anywhere you find your podcasts. At FutureSox on Twitter, my name is Ian Eskridge, at Daily White Sox on Twitter. Nick Murawski next to me, at Nick GGTB. Next to him, Danny Miller, at Danny Miller FS. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for stopping in the stream and watching us on YouTube and Twitch. You can find this in video form and in regular audio only on our YouTube, and you can find it in video on our Twitch video section as well. We thank you guys so much. We will catch up with you guys next Tuesday, same time, 9 o'clock. We will see you guys next week. Thank you very much. Have a great night. Thanks. Bye.